Hello and welcome back to the Motor Racing Passion Podcast. I'm Luke Blattman and I'm joined again by Daniel Blattman, and we're going to have a look back on round two of TCR Australia from Simmons Plains. And Daniel, it's a race meeting that off the top, we wish we could talk about how good race three was, probably one of the best TCR races in Australia that's been run. But what happened before that is what is the main talking point to come out of the weekend, unfortunately.
Yeah, but I think, and that too, just because I think a lot of the reporting and things around it are focused on the negative. So I was like, just even from the top, I was like, yeah, I think we should celebrate and just recognise how good the racing was. To be fair, over all three races, but particularly the crescendo that was race three. But I think as well, congratulations to Simmons Plains. I think Simmons Plains and TCR Racing there put on an unbelievable show, almost like a little 1.5-mile IndyCar race that was reminding me thereof at multiple times last Sunday. Good little ball ring. And I think the layout matches the cars. So there's a lot of challenges that come. Obviously, we're traveling down to Tasmania for multiple categories, as we saw across Sports Sedan's TCR last weekend. But I think they just matched the cars so well. And yeah, as you said, put on a race for the ages.
I mean, the reverse grid nature of race two and what in effect it was a reverse grid race three certainly helped it. But some of the drafting down the back straight and some of the dives into the hairpin was really good. Like guys would get passed and then they'd repass down the straight. And, you know, there's been good races at Simmons Plains in the past, but not this sort of style of racing.
No, and exactly. That's, I was just having flashbacks to mid-2000 IndyCars around the Cookie Cutter Oval. And it was, as you said, it was too wide. People in drafting packs kind of picking a drafting partner and pushing down the backstretch. So, yeah, it was, it had it all. And even the downside of that, the Harris brothers taking turns of, just slightly mixing up braking markers into the hairpin. But overall, it's a good combination. I think that's, we'll get through the unfortunate things that contributed, I guess, to what we saw in race three. But yeah, I think there's still some positives to come from it. And yeah, as I say, we've had a great weekend, screaming at the TV, both for regulations and minimum laps, as well as the actual racing.
The winner of race three, obviously Tom Oliphant, he was back as far as fifth or something at one point when he was sort of got pushed out wide. And then Dylan O'Keefe, who led for a lot of race three, he was down back in eighth or ninth at one point because he just got forced back and then slowly clawed his way back to the front. I think O'Keefe also from race two, that was a bit of a defensive driving masterclass.
Exactly. And Jeremy, I at that point too, I was like, because Tom Oliphant had the speed but couldn't find a way through in race two. But as I said, race three with some slightly older rubber in that, it really opened up. And yeah, Tom Oliphant was passing cars and cars were falling back and then finding their groove and coming forward. So, and obviously we'll get to the crux of it in the Dalboto one, but I just makes me, I think everyone's going to have regrets from that weekend. But I think in hindsight, he was full of emotion, but pulling out there, he could have very easily won that race. Do you know what I mean? And like really catapulted him back in a championship contention. But, it is what it is with regards to that. But I just thought, with the speed he'd shown in qualifying in that race one, he would have been well priced for that race three mayhem.
So I think it's one of those things where, at the very least, hopefully some of the footage can get used to promo the series going forward.
Well, absolutely. And credit to this as well. Like, we talked about the change of broadcast partners, and not that Stan and Channel 9 weren't doing this last year, but it was great to see Channel 7 and the 7 Sport social media times clipping up race packages and highlights and things and getting them out within a really short space of time. So I think that's something has been used in multiple little promotions, and I think that'll stand well for obviously when we turn our sights to round four at Phillip Island.
So we'll go through it in a nutshell what happened. Basically, we had race one on Saturday afternoon. Tony Dalberto jumps the start, but yes, that becomes a non-event because at turn three, there's a touch between Brad Harris and Ryan Casher, who hits the wall and he ends up going all the way down the straight and off into the sand at the hairpin. So they red flag the race. They have a restart and there's an incident where Brad Harris goes into the sand at turn one. So there's a safety car and basically the race runs out of time. They get going again, but the race runs out of time and it's flagged after 10 laps. with Tony D'Alberto the winner. Go to bed Saturday night, wake up, there's chat about how many points would be on offer, but there's no real chat Saturday morning that the race would be nullified. So we have race two, the reverse grid race, which Dylan O'Keefe wins. And then just before the start of race three, word comes through that basically race one's been thrown out due to a protest. And basically the grid for race number three, instead of being a combination of race one and two, it's only going to be based off race two, which means Dylan O'Keefe gets pole position and guys who finished up the front in the non-event race one, like Josh Buchan, Tony D'Alberto, they obviously ran mid-pack in the reverse grid race. That becomes then their starting spot for the final race. And Tony D'Alberto was, and Wall Racing, because David Wall gave a pretty stern interview just before the start of race three, but Tony D'Alberto goes out, does the warm-up lap, and then pulls straight into the pits and gives an interview mid-race with Chris Stubbs, showing his disgust at what happened. And basically that ends up headlining the last race. I think that pretty much covers it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think you've done a very concise little synopsis there. And yeah, I think it's just, at the time we were sitting there watching going, what's going to happen with points? And do you know what I mean? Talking about half points and talking about things like that. So I was thinking more that kind of angle rather than a cancellation of you know, or a non-race for round one, solely because of the implications of the way the format is for the rest of the week, or the rest of the weekend. So, yeah, and I think the really concerning part of mine, and you don't know what's true because we're obviously hearing a lot of different stories, but it's almost like there was agreements from category management and all the competitors around a way forward. And then there was an appeal or, you know, a request for review of that to Motorsport Australia stewards after the running of race two. And for mine, that's as soon as race two was started, any kind of protest or appeal on the finishing order or the value of race one ceased. Do you know what I mean? You missed your opportunity kind of thing. There's got to be a time frame that is put on those type of appeals when it directly impacts race two. As soon as race two started with a reverse of race one, then for mine, yeah, history was set. And I think that's a gap in the regulations that does need to be closed moving forward.
So the protest after race two seems to have come from GRM, which you would think is the main reason for Tony D'Alberto's reaction to pull out of race number three, because he says in his interview, he references, mistakes can happen. And do we think he was more referring to Motorsport Australia there and the fact that they should have made a decision quicker with regards to race one, and perhaps the reason for the protest when he meant, because he mentions, you know, other things going on in the background. Do you think that was more aimed at GRM, given that Gary and Barry Rogers are, you know, the majority owners of ARG who promote TCR Australia?
Yeah, I reckon at that moment he was probably taking aim at everyone because yeah. For at least from my understanding of it too, it's like that protest of appeal goes to the stewards. So at that point, it is out of the hands of, let's say, you know, category management as such. But you're right. It's, you know, and whether it came from directly GRM or whether it came from their paying customer, being there was an article that suggested it was from the Barguana stable of that. And do you know what I mean? How much control they have of that, you know, request for appeal? Not sure, but it was frustrating to see, you know, any of the competitors that, you know, that upset and, you know, quite emotional in the case of Tony D'Alberto there. I thought David Wall spoke well, obviously disappointed, but, you know, as we know now, so he was pushing for everyone just to contest the race and sort it out later. I think it's unfortunate to have this, you know, that kind of hanging over it, quite especially when the category's got other, you know, other challenges that everyone's kind of, you know, trying to work their way through. We've kind of got some of the biggest names of the sport here kind of at each other's throats, which is not ideal.
It's easy to think that, you know, this is GRM having a go at other teams when they should be looking out for the series as a whole. But I think you need to separate GRM from ARG in things like this, because the GRM Peugeots have got their own sponsors You can't say that, you know, we didn't protest this because it'd just be a bad look if we put the protest in, because, you know, what are the Bhagwanas and Hankcha Forklifts going to think? What are Jordan Cox and Schaeffler going to think? What's Ryan Cash going to think? You know, what's Valvoline going to think?
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that needs, you know what I mean? I'm sure it's there, but maybe that is a learning from this as well, that there just needs to be complete transparency on the separations of powers. And I was like, for the Rogers in their ARG capacity and their, you know, Gary Rogers Motorsport capacity as well, because, you know, it's not uncommon. And I'm sure it's above board, but right, when these types of pressures and, you know, unique scenarios come in, it's obviously that's where everyone can sense the worst, or they're looking for their own agenda type of thing. But like the perfect comparison I see is the Roger Penske IndyCar arrangement. He owns, runs the series, and he also runs a race team. But there's clear separation between his role as, you know, the owner and operator of the series and the running of the IndyCar team, which has a clear head in Tim Cindric. The GRO team, I think, with Heapy there as well, has got, you know, a clear kind of leader from the car preparation stables. So I think it's just a case there of, you know, really making clear and communicating that separation of powers. And, do you know what I mean, as much for the fans as well as the other competitors, because, you know, Honda is such a valuable part of this championship. So is Tony D'Alberto. So is Wall Racing preparing three cars. And again, I come back to who had speed on the weekend. So it's, it was disappointing from all sides for us to get to this point.
They need to basically publicise a bit more that, you know, Gary and Barry, while they're the head figures of GRM, the team is sort of run separately, particularly on race day, because obviously Gary Rogers, Barry Rogers, while having an involvement in the team, that they're overseeing other things. Like you say, obviously, you mentioned Penske in IndyCar these days, and also obviously that promotes the Indy 500 as well, owns IMS. But in the past, you know, there was things like when Champ Car rescued Kart, in 2003, it was four team owners that got together to save the series. Obviously, Tony George ran Vision Racing in the IRL for a couple of years. To a bit of a lesser extent, there was David Richards, who in 2000, he purchased the TV rights to the World Rally Championship when he was obviously running the Subaru World Rally team at the time. And part of that also, he sort of put in place the blueprints for sort of the cloverleaf formats of rallying. So I guess it comes back to, how did Motorsport Australia let the teams vote on a solution initially?
Do we know they did? Because I'm wondering if it was kind of an in. And Joe, I mean, we are just going off what the bits and pieces we've read and been reported, and from what obviously came through on the broadcast. But there was reference to a vote amongst teams, but that may have just been within the category, right? Do you know what I mean? So there's that vote, they've all agreed to do that. And then obviously someone who might not have been on the winning side of that vote has then decided to protest it and take it to Motorsport Australia, if that makes sense. Yeah, like it might have been a category discussion of how do we want to handle this. And then there was a vote, and then, you know, obviously more in favor of just pushing ahead. And then that's where one competitor has then decided to protest it. Because, do you know what I mean? Then all of a sudden it goes to the stewards. It doesn't go to category management.
Yeah.
So that's could 100% be wrong, but that's just kind of the piecing together of the bits and pieces I've read, and obviously we saw on the broadcast that day.
So under Motorsport Australia branding, they're showing themselves to be about as effective as CAMS ever was, and I know they're volunteer positions, but I mean this should have been handled way better, in the fact that Motorsport Australia just needed to make some decisions and stick by them.
And in a timely manner. I think that again, that's the issue. It's like, why wasn't this all thrashed out on Sunday night or Sunday afternoon or do you know what I mean? Sunday morning. The first race was at 12:30, 12:25 on Sunday. So, do you know what I mean? Like, that's a question. It's like, why did it take this long? And I don't think anyone had any kind of sinister goals or anything, but it's like the timing of it has just made it even worse as well. Like, definitely have the discussion, thrash it all out, but there was ample time for it to happen before race two.
And also the fact that once that decision was made to scrap race one, that also basically should have rendered race two a non-event, because the grid was based on the race one reverse grid. How then do you form the grid for race three on the race two grid, given the race, sorry, the race two results, when the race two grid was formed by the race one results?
Absolutely. Once I went to the Shewards and that was the problem, but I guess this is, as soon as you grid race two on that, on the results of race one, the stone's been cast. Do you know what I mean? You can't then go back and unravel it. The only way, and this is a compromise, and probably the Stewards just interpreting a rule book would say no, but the other option for race three was still give no points for race one, but, do you know what I mean, still combine the race three grid on the results of race one and race two. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I know yeah. that would, in the absolute black and white of a regulation, say no, but, do you know what I mean, noting that race two started on a defunct race also convenes that. So, do you know what I mean? Maybe there was a compromise then too. Tony would have been on the front row. Buchan would have been set. Do you know what I mean? Then they could have protested what they do with the points, or, you know, go to a hearing after the event. But to have all this going down on the back of the pits on the Sunday was, in hindsight, well, not even in hindsight, because we knew it at the time, but, not the way to be dealing with this.
So let's pretend we're the Stewards. Let's go right back to the start. Let's work out what should have happened. So race one, obviously, there's the accident with Ryan Casher, ends up in the sand. Do we know why that was a red flag?
I think it was when he got put in the wall on the straight, basically the whole front left of his car just disintegrated itself all the way down to the hairpin. So I think it was a bit of a cleanup and worried about, you know, obviously debris on track, and potentially under a red flag, they thought they could recover that quickly, which I think, you know, makes sense. Like, the other option was, and this is the hindsight, maybe they thought that was quicker, a cleaner and quicker example to get everyone back to racing. Whereas if they just ran 30 laps behind the safety car, we wouldn't be in this mess. No. Do you know what I mean? Like, it would have been boring, and we would have obviously, it's not great when we're trying to grow the category, but we wouldn't have this scenario. Yeah. So
we would have spent this podcast talking about that bit probably.
yeah, exactly. And how it's a bad advertisement, and they should, who cares if they, you know, only ran 10 laps or something, at least they were, exactly. You're damned if you do and damned if you don't. So that's my understanding of why it went red.
So we get restart again. Off we go. Obviously, there's the safety car for Brad Harris going off, and then the race gets going again, and then they flag it after 10 laps.
Time certain.
Now, I watched race one on 7+, so I'm not sure of how tight the timing was with 7Mate, given 7Mate showed the race live. I've read that the post-race interviews were shown, and people saying that could have been used as time to extend the race, which on the surface, I think that would definitely be the right move given what ended up happening, because you could have fitted another 10 laps into that in that scenario. But the problem that's happened
or just run the minimum you need to get a, you know what I mean, make it a race.
Yeah. I mean, if the telecast was cutting out at 7Mate and 7Mate only got the end of the race and that was it, well, then I guess their hands were tied. But if what I read was...
And this is probably the other part too, and this is where you just can't do stuff on the run, but at least last year, all the competitors were worried about was free-to-air mainstream coverage. So, you know what I mean, I think... Because I was doing the same thing about the time certain. When I looked at the track schedule, the drift cars came on at 4:05, and we're finished at 4:05 to 4:04. And then there was nothing else. Now, I'm not sure if that was a noise restriction or what the things are, but I was looking at that going, well, their last race, rather than demonstration, race of the day, why not just let it run to the conclusion? But again, that could have been noise, or that could, like, requirements for Simmons Plains, or alternatively, it could have been, you know, obviously them adhering to the team's advice that they, you know, they wanted to be on them, when I say the main seven, like the actual network 7Mate channel rather than the 7+.
Yeah. And this sort of stuff goes way back to V8 Supercars in 2007 at Pukekohe, when race three, due to safety cars and so on, basically it ran to, they ran the race to the end of the telecast, and then didn't feature the podium or driver interviews, but they got the whole race in. And that led to complaints that fans didn't see the the driver interviews. So then they changed the rules that the race had, no matter what the race had, even if it's cut short, the time certain finish would give enough time for the telecast to still interview the winners before going off air, which I guess to us seems like, geez, you'd rather get the racing in.
Yeah.
But I can see the fact that obviously the sponsors want to, if they win the race, they want to see their driver get interviewed. So it's a hard one. I'd say just run the race to the end of the telecast and the winner crosses the finish line and Greg Russ says, well, that'll take us out from Simmons Plains. We'll be back tomorrow.
Yeah, and exactly that. You can catch our driver interviews on the website or on 7 Plus or whatever. Yeah, John, I agree. I think in that instance, maximize the racing on the main channel and then you can pick up the other one after.
So we go off the fact it finished it after a third distance. So then you come back Saturday and obviously there's rules for in the Motorsport Australia rulebook for how far a race has to be declared and so on and so forth, which ultimately is what they applied after race two. I think if they got through 10 laps, that's enough to at least offer half points, isn't it?
From our point of view. Well, and so, yeah, this is the thing, because we obviously during the week, we were tallying up races that had been paid half points that, you know, ran two or three laps and things like that. So, but then equally, there's a number of other examples that were deemed to be an incomplete race as well. So that's a part of it. But yeah, I was like, surely there's a way just to give half points. And, I'm sure there's still people will be complaining about it then, but still, at least it doesn't have flow on effects for race two and race three, which is what this has caused.
I think if
the worst part of this is, right, because obviously there's a hearing into it, because not to go on about it, but should have been the approach to the whole thing, was just deal with the whole thing after the event. Yeah. The Walls now have obviously put in an appeal. And what we don't want now, and as much as I feel for the Dalbertos and the Buckins, you don't want now them to say, well, race two and three void. Because then, do you know what I mean? Then we've just wasted everyone's time, everyone's money, you know, which was an effort to get down to Simmons Plains. It was a great advertisement for the circuit and the category with the quality of racing. Should have been half points or found a way to make race one valid to then, you know, flow into race two and race three.
Yeah, I think if you risk the cars in the race, then it deserves some points. If there's a competitive element, you have to make it worthwhile, rather than just scrub the whole thing. And I think, like you said, they should have just said, we'll deal with this post-race. But at the very least, if they raced the cars in race one, that had to have counted for the third race.
Yeah.
Because I think even if post-event, if Dalberto had been allowed to start from pole for race three, and then you find out after the event that we've scrubbed there's no points for race one, I don't think there's necessarily that much of a controversy. There's certainly not grounds for a pull out of a race.
Yeah, exactly. Do you know what I mean? You're going to have the argument, which is fine, because then you can do it with all the available information. But this is kind of done a bit on the hop. Well, do you know what I mean? It was created by not doing it on a Saturday afternoon. But yeah, on the hop, I agree. A post-event thing could have been done, and then it could have been addressed on the whole rather than just trying to treat race one retrospectively in isolation, which you can't do.
I have to give credit to the TV coverage, because they could have so easily buried this whole thing.
Yes, yep, 100%
but
agree.
To their credit, they just let it play out. The story just was what it was. They interviewed David Wall. They sent Chris Stubbs in to interview Tony Dalberto, and, you know, they let Tony have his say. And you wonder what people were thinking when Chris Stubbs went in and said to Tony Dalberto, we'll see you at Phillip Island. There would have been a few people shuddering at what he might say then, but it was allowed to play out. And I think it's full credit to them, because it would have been so easy. They could have not spoken to anyone before the start of the race. They could have just said they're gritting up because there's been a protest. Off it goes. You know, Tony Dalberto pulls in on the warm-up lap and they just say, oh, something's wrong with the Honda.
Yeah, he's pulled off. They could have ignored it. Yeah.
Yeah. But so I think that's full credit to them.
Yeah, no, agreed. And Jeremy, I think it's great to have independent media, which is not something we're really blessed with in other areas of Australian motorsport. So that's I think that's really good. They just reported what was happening in front of them. as you said, Stubbsy there, quite happy to go in and, you know, jump into the fire. And, you know, because I think the original footage was of Tony D'Alberto walking back to the truck, and it was almost like he was going to get in his rental car and head back to the airport. But I think from that point of view, it added a bit of drama. Not that that race three needed it. That was the other thing too. You had the broadcast, you had the commentary team, they're trying to like balance the kind of heavy information coming from pit lane with combined with what was happening on tracks. It was had it all. But yeah, I thought the broadcast team handled that really well.
So yeah, it's one of those things. I would have probably thought they might have covered it up, especially coming on a weekend when TCR needed some good news stories off the back of, obviously, they've just rejoined free-to-air TV on Seven. They've just had the World Tour rounds knocked out. You know, there was a smaller grid. It was a weekend that you would have thought they would have done anything just to cover everything up. So full credit in terms of transparency, and hopefully it continues.
And sorry, just taking a step back from that as well, the whole weekend coverage, you know, like the interviews with Nathan Hearn, going around the history of Simmons Plains and Tasmanian motorsport, and there was an interview with Aaron Cameron that was really good. So it's not just rolling a camera up and then just, you know, smiling into it. They're actually, you know, putting some work in, which I thought was really, really good.
Well, yeah, well, like that Aaron Cameron interview in the Country Club Hotel in Longford. I had the pleasure of going there last year, and it is an amazing place. It's as good as it looked on the TV. It is just wall-to-wall motorsport memorabilia and Longford memorabilia. And as we said, right on the Longford track. And there's so much more of the Longford track that's still there than what you might believe. And it's not too far to have a drive around. You can drive on bits of the old track. You can walk to bits of the old track, which are basically cut off from the road these days. You can still eye the viaduct if you're willing to, you know, crouch down beside the highway. But also in the TV coverage, obviously they had, I've got to say, the music was top shelf. It wasn't just, you know, no-name music. They're obviously willing to pay the rights for music. And also there was a lot of old Simmons Plains footage from the Channel 7 archive, which was good to see too.
Yeah, no, that was really good. And I think that's part of, and what I've been really impressed by, obviously, Seven Sports commitment to this, but also Motorsport Australia, who no doubt driving it behind the scenes. But yeah, there's this real connection to the, you know, the history of the sport, and it's, you know, obviously the current day speed series categories and everything that's on show, but obviously also connecting that back, which I think is really good, and good to see them being proactive.
Do you think Tony D'Alberto regrets pulling out of race three?
I reckon now he does. And Jamie, I think even we were chatting as it was happening on Sunday, and the chat around, you know, like when you're that emotional and you're that angry, like, Joe, maybe it's a good idea that he wasn't in the car. Do you know what I mean? If you're not quite fully there focused. But I think seeing how race three panned out, seeing his speed, I was like, he had every right to be upset and frustrated, much the same as Josh Buchan to a lesser extent. Like, he was second behind Tony D in qualifying in the race. But do you know what I mean? Like, just obviously was upset, but just got out there and got on with it. And I think, you know, there's, as we said before, Tony D'Alberto could have easily won that race. And do you know what I mean? He could have still said all the things he wanted to say and chased it up race, you know, after the event, but he still would have had those points in the bag. And yeah, I think he probably does regret it. Obviously, and he was quite open and honest about it when he said, no, the wall team were pushing him to race, and it was his decision. He probably had some questions from Honda, who he's representing there at that race too. And I think that's, for mine, that's where it was disappointing too. Not only did he have a competitive car that he could have won, but, you know, Honda have been a great supporter of TCR Racing for a number of years, obviously the 2022 champions. And, you know, we're trying to maximize cars, and there's three Hondas on the grid. And, yeah, I just thought that was, whilst he was entitled and had every right to be upset, I thought that was just, you know, really to, I think, everyone's detriment, even his. So yeah, no, looking forward, and got everything crossed that both Honda and him will be fronting up at Phillip Island and, you know, hopefully come out and deliver a result.
Yeah, I think his criticisms would have hit harder if he could have done it from a podium interview at the end of race three. I think while me and you were watching it, we're like, we totally get why he's angry and upset. and he had every right to give him a spray. But the fact he pulled the car out, you know, like he's representing Honda, he's representing Walls. I mean, he's representing the Starlight Foundation as well, which, I mean, it's a bit, maybe a bit unfair to bring that up, but because, you know, his intentions are, obviously they're trying to raise money for the Starlight Foundation and everything. And instead, what's overriding that is the fact that he pulled out.
And that's, for everything, for the event, for the category, for people watching at home, do you know what I mean? There's plenty of Honda fans watching on. So I think he had an opportunity there to, almost really strengthen his position by, putting in a really strong performance and, still speaking his mind and sharing his thoughts. So you never know. We might be talking about the run that he goes on from here. Round seven, Bathurst, we might be talking about this amazing run that he went on post-Simmons Plains.
Well, he gave a very delayed yep when Chris Stubbs asked him, we'll see you at Phillip Island. What would a loss of Tony D'Alberto and or Honda mean for the series? Because you have to wonder, D'Alberto did the Honda deal, brought it to Wall Racing. Is their allegiance, if Tony D'Alberto's had enough, is Honda just going to sort of be as dismayed as him? And would they pull out with him? Would they stick with Wall? But what would the loss of either of them mean for the series, do you think?
Oh, I think the series is stronger for both their involvements. And do you know what I mean? Like the manufacturer involvement from Hyundai, Honda, obviously Peugeot through the JRM production line are invested in the series. So I think that's what really makes TCR Racing unique in terms of the touring car racing that we've got in Australia. So from that point of view, it'd be a massive loss. And I don't want to go too far down that that train of thought when we don't really have a lot to go on apart from a rather emotional Tony D'Alberto. But I think he's the 2022 champions, got competitive at the World Tour around last year. Tony performed really well against Girolami. As we've touched on, we don't have the World Tour for this year. Ironically, Honda have actually strengthened their car count in the World Tour. But for the series, we need Honda. We need a really former champion like Tony D'Alberto, and hoping that they stay involved. And obviously, as we said before, we get the World Tour back next year. And obviously, that provides more value for Honda and all the manufacturers. So hopefully the organizers are in contact with them and keeping that relationship strong, because Honda have been a supporter of TCR Racing since it started at Eastern Creek in 2019. So they're stronger for them.
But by the same token, when it comes to the appeal, if they're threatening to pull out, you can't just turn the results around just to keep them in the series. Motorsport Australia needs to draw a line, and you can't just pander because they're a big name and a big driver for them to get the result they want.
No, far from it, because that's only temporary measure. So no, I don't think anyone would be going down that path. I think it's more just closing the gaps that there are and engaging in some dialogue with them. And do you know what I mean? Like, I can't imagine Honda in it solely because of Tony D'Alberto. I mean, as we said, he was obviously the connector to this back in 2019, but through Wall Racing and lots of different things, there's this value that goes beyond just one driver. So let's hope that that's all being, just worked through in the background, and, we can get a solid commitment, and at minimum we get back up to 15 cars for Phillip Island.
Any Honda or D'Alberto pull out, if it means less cars, we only had 13 on the grid at Tasmania, which was disappointing in itself, if not totally unexpected, because Tasmania has always struggled to get cars from the mainland. And if you've only got 15 cars for round one, there is the likelihood that you certainly wouldn't be likely to have an increased grid when you go to Tasmania. But in terms of Australian touring car history, I mean, obviously the direct comparison these days is that obviously there's 24 supercars at every round, and including when they go to Tasmania. But if you go back through Australian touring car history, Tasmania always had less cars. And even, and this is an extreme and probably, pointless example, but if you look at 1986, which was the second year of the new Group A formula, you had 11 starters for the Australian Touring Car Championship round at Simmons. So even in good times, Simmons can struggle to get a full grid.
Exactly. Do you know what I mean? As we talked before, 20 cars needs to be the standard for there. So they're not a world away, but there's good quality within that group of 15. And it's not uncommon, as you said, like, do you know what I mean? The travel costs associated with Tasmania and obviously historically over to Western Australia as well at Wanneroo. So there's, yeah, it's not alone. It's not uncommon. Just, do you know what I mean? It's the priority now is obviously getting Marcus Liddell and Ian McDougall back on the grid. I think Liddell's indicated that he'll be the bend in South Australia's his targeted return. And hopefully McDougall, we can get on circuit for Phillip Island and potentially sneak another one somewhere. But yeah, we've got to slowly be adding cars, not losing them.
They even made a mention of getting more cars out during the telecast as well, during race two. Tasmania is an unfair example. It's easy to pick on it, but I think it's Phillip Island that'll start telling the stories. If we roll out with 13 at Phillip Island, then there's then maybe there's cause for a bit of worry, but hopefully not.
Yeah, no. Hopefully we can get things back on an even keel and work towards building again. And yeah, as I said, we've got a strong TV package and got some great events coming up. So yeah, let's hope some more competitors can get behind it. And as you said, the advert that Race 3 put on should hopefully encourage a few people to get involved.
So look ahead to Phillip Island for round 3. And one thing all the dramas at Simmons Plains did was meant it was really hard to get a feel for where everyone was at Simmons. Obviously, the Honda was quick and Buchan was quick. The Peugeots seemed a little bit off. It was quite a bit different compared to Sandown when in our round one wrap, we thought that the Sandown results might flow into Simmons.
Yeah, Honda's had a great speed. Again, the Peugeots were fast. Yeah, and I think, as we said, the layout of Simmons Plain meant that everyone had a bit of something. The Hyundais were quick as well. So yeah, it's kind of going to read from event to event really hard until they roll out for Friday practice.
I can see the Hondas being quite good at Phillip Island. Because it's going to be, obviously, it's a much more high-speed track. There's not a lot of stop-start corners. You know, there's Honda hairpin and, sorry, Miller corner and MG. You know, they're the slowest parts of the track. And it seems, well, I mean, if Bathurst was anything to go by, the Honda's quite good in sort of flowing corners. But then again, it was quick at Simmons Plains too. So who knows?
Yeah, no, exactly. But you're right, even going back to Coulthard, who was quite strong there when he's kind of one-off races that he did. So yeah, I'd be looking for the Honda. And even just touching on form, despite the Harris's, obviously little incidents here or there when it came to the hairpins, the speed that he showed, particularly Brad Harris, qualified third or fourth, that was really strong.
He's coming along really good in the new car.
Yeah. And
honestly, those Hondas look really good. The Harris colour scheme looks great. Really, really works with the lines of the Honda. And like you said, it was 2022 with Fabian Coulthard winning two of the three races, and it included that great Dyson race three with Will Brown.
As I said, actually, Will Brown features a lot in some of our favourite races within TCR. But yeah, that was a great head-to-head battle. Actually, speaking of, it's one of the things we've got to follow up is what's happened to that archive from all those races from 2022, which it's on the list of things to try and tackle. But yeah, I'd be looking for all three Hondas to be competitive come Phillip Island.
Well, actually, speaking of the footage, it was interesting that TCR Australia put up some footage from the 2021 Simmons Plains round, which was very interesting because it showed how different things are. Obviously, Jordan Cox was flying at the time in a GRM run alpha and battling at that round with the ASM alphas of Lee Holdsworth.
I've got to even stretch my brain to remember Lee Holdsworth in the series, Joe, how quickly, it's evolved. But yeah, in the alpha.
Yeah, well, obviously 2021, such a short season. Well,
that's a good point. I'd forgotten that. Yeah, it was kind of that big break in the middle. And then there was obviously the Bathurst round that then came at the end of the year. But he didn't compete in those, did he? So
any tips for Phillip Island? Who do you think will win race 1 and 3?
Oh, it's
It's I feel like we're just sticking your thumb in the air and guessing. But what I'll say, race two will either be Tom Oliphant or Dylan O'Keefe. That seem to be those guys where they're at. But yeah, race one, I'll back Tony D'Alberto to come back strong and jump in, do the talking on the track and try and put all this behind us. And then race three, I'm going to go Josh Buchan just because he's been there or thereabouts over all the races so far. And Joe has been very consistent, but just hasn't quite snuck over the line.
Yeah, Buchan's been my standard tip for the pace setting round win in the first two rounds, and he hasn't got a race win yet. So I'm going to tip him third time lucky, surely. And my standard race two winner has been Clay Richards, and he got very close. Actually, he got very close in race three as well last weekend. And it's good, actually, on that, it's good to see that it seems like both Clay Richards and Dylan O'Keefe are in for the season. So
yeah,
that's great,
and that's good. Yeah, because Clay Richards has been just like evolving so fast, and you're right, he was coming on very quickly at the end of the race there. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see him knock that over as well. So and that Cooper, as you said, is very quick and looks the part too.
And Michael Clementi won a race at Phillip Island in it last year. So
it was there in Winton, wasn't it? Yeah.
So. Yes. Yeah. On debut at Phillip Island as well in the car. So that augurs well for perhaps in a couple of weeks.
No, I am looking forward to it as much as so we can move on to this as well as you know, yeah, as well just looking forward to round three of the series.
Well, it'll be a good meeting as well because you've got the Australian GT Championship there. You've got the GT4s as well.
Actually, it'll be very good because I haven't seen an entry list, but just by tracking the different cars that have been announced for the GT series, it's going to be really good.
All right, so that's coming up in a couple of weeks and we'll be watching with interest. Thanks for joining me for the round two wrap, Daniel.
Thank you very much. And I look forward to, hopefully speaking about less controversy off track and more of it on track after round three.
Me too. So we'll be back soon with another podcast. Thank you for listening.